I gave her a sedative, so she should be out for a couple of hours.
We should have left when Mia wanted to.
Baby, please. Okay, let's not lose our heads, okay? With any luck, it'll stop raining in a couple hours, and we'll be able to cross the creek in the morning, and we'll take her to a hospital. Mia, put the gun down. Put the gun down, please.
Hello, and welcome to The Collision, Collider's podcast about movies, TV, and more. I'm the site's managing editor, Matt Goldberg, and with me, as always, are associate editors Adam Chitwood.
Howdy.
And Dave Trumbor.
What's up?
Today we will be talking about the remake of Evil Dead, and more importantly, we will be talking about the violence and the appeal of violence that is showcased in the film. The film itself is certainly worth discussing, but when I saw the film premiere at South by Southwest, I was blown away not just by how graphic it is, and it certainly is one of the most graphically violent films I've seen in terms of how realistic it wants to make the violence appear, but also in terms of how the audience responded. The bloodlust was palatable. People were excited a little bit because they enjoy Sam Raimi's 1981 film, the original Evil Dead, but really what they were there for was just the buckets of blood that were going to rain down, literally. Rain down. And so when I did the interviews at South By, I asked everyone, and I wanted to make it very clear to them, this is not being judgmental, and I'm not asking this question judgmentally at all. I am legitimately curious. Why do we find this kind of violence appealing, or really any violence? What are the different levels of violence and approach to violence that makes them entertaining as opposed to off-putting? And this was clearly done in the case of Evil Dead to be entertaining. So why is this level of ultimate brutality done to – why does it entertain? So Adam, Dave, what are your thoughts?
Well, Adam, you go ahead. Did you see it at South By, or where did you see it?
No, I saw it this weekend. But I feel like there's an important distinction to make, because I feel like something like Hostel, where it's humans doing terrible things to humans, like, that's not appealing to me, and I do not want to sit down and watch that and enjoy that. But something like Evil Dead, where it's a deadite. I mean, technically it's still a human body, but I feel like the appeal of something like this is the outlandishness of it. Like, you can take it as not – it's not so grave and so kind of like disturbing. I feel like the level of violence in something like this, where it's just kind of just ridiculous, and when it keeps like pushing it forward with like the blood and just the body disassembly and just so many body parts coming apart. But it's all in good fun, because it's this ridiculous like demon-y characters. Like, it doesn't I feel like there's a difference between violence on the level in Evil Dead and then violence on a level of something like Hostel or even something like Olympus Has Fallen, where you're stabbing people in the brain.
Yeah, actually at WonderCon last weekend, Bruce Campbell was there because he's a producer on the remake. He's obviously the star of the original and the star of the original trilogy. He spoke exactly to Adam's point. He said, you know, this is brutal, it's bloody. It looks, you know, he said the effects look a lot better than they did in 1981, so they're more realistic in that sense. But he you know, repeatedly mentioned that it's not torture porn. You know, it's not, to use his words, you can watch this and be scared and walk out at the end of the day and you had a good experience. With torture porn, you walk out at the end of the day and you want to go kill yourself. That's basically like that was his kind of like line for describing this. And as I was watching it, I kept, you know, kind of going back to that, and he's right. And it's Adam, I think, hit it on the head. It's just that you're watching this as an experience. You know, it's a movie. It's not like based on true events or something that could conceivably happen, you know, to a couple friends out in a cabin, like so many of these torture porn movies that get away from sort of the demonic possession where it's just human on human violence. And that's just so much more degrading and disturbing and cringeworthy, where this stuff, I don't know your guys' reaction to this, but I'm kind of a sick bastard. So when I see stuff like this on screen, I laugh. Like that's my nervous response.
Oh, I had a giant grin on my face for the whole time.
Oh yeah. I just have like this nervous outburst of laughter every time. It's kind of sick. But
well, see, and I enjoyed it, and I agree that in terms of the way it's presented, it's supernatural, and apparently mm-hmm. that's how they got an R rating on it, because it's done in a supernatural thing. But there are moments in this film that aren't strictly supernatural, like when someone cuts their own arm off, and they're not really in that mode where the distinction starts to blur. There's another moment where a limb gets pulled off, and I understand point it's so over the top that it's like, well, how can we not laugh? And look, again, I enjoyed the film for what it is. Mm-hmm. Director Fede Alvarez knew what he wanted, knew how to get it, and he did. As far as a film setting out its goals in terms of, I want to make this as gory as humanly possible, it's a success. Mm-hmm. From a storytelling perspective and possibly from a not being misogynistic perspective, the film has some serious problems. But in terms of spectacle, it gets the job done, and yet it's just that level. I think especially because it will inevitably be compared to Raimi's film, and Raimi's film is on the cheap. And Raimi's mm-hmm. film is, because it's on the cheap, the effects feel more cartoonish and outlandish, and that's also mm-hmm. partially just because of the way Sam Raimi directs movies. He is very much in that cartoony Three Stooges kind of close-up zoom-in vibe. The original Evil Dead is sort of Raimi trying to find his voice as a filmmaker. It has moments that are meant to be scary, and then others that are just meant to be over-the-top comical, and so it's this weird sort of smashing together of styles. But in the remake, it's very much, let's, I don't want to say scare people, because it stops being scary about halfway through. I don't think Evil Dead is...
Yeah, I don't think it's particularly scary. But I feel like Alvarez strikes this weird tone. I think I was really impressed by him, and I'm not like a horror guy, so I mean I enjoy like a few horror movies, but I'm not kind of one of those who digs deep and was like looking to like critique this really deeply. But I was really struck by how strong Alvarez's vision for the film came through, and I feel mm-hmm. like he struck this weird context, and this, it's all about tone and context. So like when you were saying, like when a character cuts their arm off, even though it's so horrific and it's still like, it's, he's not going like Tarantino levels of blood, it's like it's essentially a realistic, like if someone cut their arm off, this is how much blood there would be. But it's all within the context of this tone that Alvarez has struck, and it feels like fun, I guess. And it sounds sick to say that, but I don't know. I feel like it works in the context of this film, even though the like the gore is so bloody and so just kind of, like I said, like in a realistic version. I was really, really impressed by how strong Alvarez's vision was throughout it, that he was able to kind of craft it in a context of not, I mean, it like visually, like blood wise, you could say it went like technically too far, but it never felt like it was going too far.
I just want to speak to the rating real quick. I think it's interesting. Again, I'll talk about WonderCon because these two were kind of like back-to-back and they came up a lot, and there were a lot of things that I could pull from that for this movie. It was funny to see that Evil Dead got an R rating and probably one of the hardest Rs that you could get. That's obvious. The funny thing is that James Wan's spook movie coming up that's called The Conjuring actually got an R rating too, and there's not an ounce of blood, nudity, overt violence, any explicit things like that. The MPAA basically said it was, quote, too scary for PG-13. So I just think it's interesting to make that distinction, that these are both R-rated scary movies, but on just drastically different ends of the spectrum as far as the outright gore goes. And it's an interesting kind of point to, you know, viewers' preferences or critics' preferences or, you know, the people that make these guidelines, like what determines an R, like what's okay for what's okay for audiences to watch in that rating. It's strange that The Conjuring has zero blood and Evil Dead has all the blood, and they're both the same level of accessibility for people. I just found that interesting.
Well, don't be afraid of the dark was in the same boat. I forgot who directed, but Del Toro produced it, and they thought they made a PG-13 movie, but the MPAA wouldn't give it to them. They told them it was R because it was too scary.
Yeah,
so that's, I mean, again, like, to speak to your point of like a movie that we've seen, like you look at Don't Be Afraid of the Dark with Evil Dead, like how are those the same?
Well, the rating system is completely fucked in more ways than one. Yes. I mean, it's fucked just from the surface. One, it says it takes a much harder line with sexual content than violence. It takes a much more lenient tone with studio films than it does with indies. And third, it's simply too limited. I believe that there needs to be a new in-between rating between PG-13 and R to differentiate, sort of like in the UK they have like 15. Or you just need some sort of new thing. You need some new letter or whatever distinction to say these films are for this audience and these films are for this audience.
Bang. You know what? It doesn't even matter, though. I mean, I walked into this one, and there were people of all ages there. There were people that were clearly old enough to have seen the original.
If we're even going to have a rating system at all, if we're going to have anything to inform the public, I'm not saying that you can or cannot cut people off, although I think it would be not the worst idea in the world to say people under a certain age can't see Evil Dead. Like, maybe people...
Like, two, maybe? Because there were people with babies at Evil Dead? Just blows my mind.
No, it doesn't blow my mind at all.
It does. Somebody mentioned on Twitter earlier, they were like, I heard this kind of secondhand, they were like, I can't believe this person brought their two-year-old to go see Evil Dead. They're going to miss every single reference to the original. And I just thought that was pretty funny.
That is pretty good. No, but I would say, like, just have a new rating or some kind of rating where it says people under 13 not admitted. It's not NC-17. You don't have to be that old. Right. But under 13, not admitted no matter what. And then you just have like this good little middle area there where you don't have to worry about a two-year-old going to Evil Dead because their parents are like, I want to do whatever I want, and I can't get a babysitter. I don't understand. Yeah. Why can't I do the things that I want to do all the time even though I have kids? So that aside, hey, we were talking about violence. We look at violence because there is something wrong with it, though. I think going back to Evil Dead, the thing that we're trying to come here with this film that it creates is that it's a supernatural setting, but it's realistic violence. The violence is meant to be as realistic as possible. And so looking at something that realistic, I just still don't understand, why are we deriving joy from it? Why are people cheering for those moments? And again, not judgmental, but what do you think, where do you think that comes from?
I think for me, I mean, I can't speak to anybody else, obviously,
speak
but just
for
me personally.
Everybody in the
I speak
world,
for
Dave.
Everyone because everyone grew up at like 5 years old watching, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street and you know, the Jason movies, the Michael Myers movies, and then everything in between from, you know, Pinhead to Candyman to, my God, Phantasm, everything. I watch everything I can get my hands on in like the 80s and 90s. And surprisingly, my dad let me do all that stuff because he sat down and watched it with me. So we're both sick, sick individuals. That's why I enjoy movies like this. I'm with Adam, though. I really didn't enjoy, like, the torture porn movies. They're just kind of – it's like a cringeworthy, sadistic experience to watch. But when I know that I'm just watching – when I'm watching a story, it's just like any other movie. You know, the violence, the gore, the deaths, the killing, the everything, that's just part of that particular story for me. And I can enjoy it because there's that level of separation that I have. I'm sure for some people it goes the other direction, that they enjoy it because they don't have that level of separation and there's something actually wrong with them and it's something that they would like to see happen in real life. But I think for most people it's that suspension of disbelief, and you can kind of enjoy it because you know somewhere in the back of your mind that it's not real. So it's okay to just let out the nervous laughter.
For me, it's kind of more of like the rarity of it. Like we don't You're just like, holy shit, like, look at that. Like, I've never seen that before. And you're in, like, scary movies. Like, I feel like the purpose of scary movies are like, pure entertainment. You're just supposed to have a good time. You're supposed to, like, someone who's directing a scary movie is crafting moments to make you feel something and to make you jump and to make you afraid and make you not want to turn the lights off. And so I feel like it goes into that. It's kind of – you feel like you're along for a ride. Mm-hmm. And when it's something like this, again, I feel like I don't know. It's hard for me to explain. It just felt like in the context of it. Like if someone had showed me a clip of the arm dismemberment scene, like without the context of the movie, I probably would have been pretty grossed out. But I just feel like the beats of the movie leading up to it, it comes to – and it starts off pretty serious. I mean, this isn't the tone of Raimi's Evil Dead 2. This is a straight – it's played pretty straightforward. There's a few I mean, the dialogue's pretty great. There's a few like kind of smaller jokes and stuff like that to add a little bit of levity. But it's not like it's set up as like a, oh, you're supposed to have fun. It's everything's played pretty seriously. But once you – once Jane Levy's character starts to become the Deadite and you just see kind of like the movements and the face, it's not played as like one of these like ghastly, like horribly like demon characters that's going to terrorize everyone. It's just like a completely ridiculous, like saying terrible things in this deep voice. And, you know, I feel like in the within the context of the Evil Dead universe is why it kind of works and becomes fun, because you feel like you're along for the ride. You're seeing things that you don't normally see in other movies. That's just kind of crazy, and I don't know. It's hard to explain. I can't really speak for anyone else. I guess that's kind of the best way I can explain it, why I felt kind of enjoyed for it. But I mean, Matt, you were at a film festival atmosphere, so I mean, I didn't have people like screaming and like clapping and in my screening or anything like that. So I'm not sure if it was kind of maybe the premiere aspect that had.
I'm sure that definitely contributed to it. It's a film festival aspect.
Right.
But keep in mind, these are the people who, and again, these are the people who are almost definitely going to be in the tank for it, because they've been waiting in line for hours and have bought an expensive pass. And they are pretty much geared to love this film. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, they are geared to love this film based on what they had already seen, a Red Band trailer. They knew what they were getting into, and the film did not mislead. It just gave them more of what they want. It gave them exactly what they wanted. And so they had to know what they wanted in the first place. And so my feeling is that looking at a film like Evil Dead, perhaps it's that element of escapism, as all film can provide. It's just a weird form of escapism, because it's one that's not, as I said earlier, obviously pleasurable. I was saying this before we, it's not like, oh, someone, you know, made a joke, or, oh, it's like, you know, a superhero flying, like, oh, that's awesome. And he's fighting in robots. Like it's just really simple kind of a wish fulfillment. But what is this wish that's being fulfilled? It's not really wish fulfillment at this point, but it is escapism. No. It's indulging this sort of, is it a darkness there? And it's not like, oh man, if we all just look inside, we'll see the evil within us. The film isn't doing that at all. And I don't.
Everybody wants to kill someone.
Everyone wants to kill.
Everyone's had fantasies of dismembering people.
Well,
that reminds me of the Purge trailer that I saw before that.
Adam, you say everyone's having. You say that as a joke, but I think video games have shown us that.
Or even like Hostel, like the whole point of Hostel is that people want to live out these fantasies of doing terrible things to other humans.
Right.
It's always the same way. Yeah.
Right. But again, there's these different levels, and I totally agree that the horror and violence in Saw and Hostel is completely different than the violence in Evil Dead. But for instance, I don't consider myself a violent person. I don't think a lot of people do. I don't think someone walks along and says, you know what, I'm a violent person, and just goes on their way. But for instance, I've been playing BioShock Infinite, and there's a special way you can kill enemies. If you get their health down low enough, if you then do a melee attack, you can do a special kind of horrific kill with your skyhook, which is like this metal, it's a hook, I'll just tell you that. And it's this giant mechanical hook, and you can just lay into enemies. And I kid you not, when you do that, your female companion goes, oh my god! She is as horrified as what you're doing, and what the game lets you do. There's an achievement for it, for God's sakes. That's the kind of thing that it is, and it's there, and we embrace it. And I don't want to go into this place of, I'm like, I think we're becoming more violent because of these. I don't believe that for a second. I don't think movies or video games or television just makes people more violent. I think if that were true, then places all over the world would be more violent. I think London would be more violent. Japan would be more violent. That the crime statistics would be percentage-wise the same across the board, because we're all consuming the same amount of entertainment. But it's not the case. I don't think that's real. I think unhinged people are unhinged and are going to be violent no matter how much Evil Dead or how many video games they play. It doesn't matter. But what I think is reflected in Evil Dead is that there is some sort of bloodlust that we find enjoyable. And I still find that curious, that it's even there. That I'm not saying everyone goes into Evil Dead and just like, how can you not be repulsed? Some people will be easily repulsed. It's not their kind of film. But I don't know. I don't go around looking for Evil Dead. I didn't go around saying, man, I wish there was more horrific movies like that. And maybe that's just my preference for genre.
See, I think it's less wish fulfillment. I think this is just like the good old-fashioned, you know, horror movie that just gets your adrenaline pumping. That's really it. I think it's just for the scares. I don't really think there's a whole lot of bloodlust to it. I mean, at least that's my perspective on it. Some people in the audience reacted differently to different aspects of this, of the movie. There are certain scenes that I think affect different people in different ways. I think there's the scares that you get, whether they're jump scares or whatever they happen to be. And then there's sort of this self-mutilation of some of the characters, you know, in a variety of different ways with a variety of different implements of destruction. And I think that it's that cringe factor because you don't do that to yourself unless you actually have an issue. You don't physically harm yourself. And I think that just makes people cringe, but at the same time, they can't look away. It's that train wreck. It's that car crash aspect of it too. And I think that's just like an adrenaline component of movies like this. And I think that's why it works so well.
Yeah. And again, it's all context. I was sort of, for me, Evil Dead is one of those films where you have to start cracking jokes, not so that mm-hmm. you feel superior to the material, just because you need that extra step back sometimes. Right. So when the one character is chopping off her arm and you just like, Franco did it, whatever. Yeah. He did it with a blunt blade. Quit
someone
your
did
whining.
That in real
but
life.
But someone did it in real life. And it's played completely differently in 127 hours. But it again, it's something where I remember, but people were talking about the scene in 127 hours. They're like, I can't watch this. It's
exactly.
too much. It's too much. And then you have it, but you have a similar, I mean, it's the action of cutting off your own limb, but with a different tool. And all of a sudden people are like, yee-wee! Yeah, that's fucking
you
awesome.
You also don't have the, like, beyond disturbing Danny Boyle's, like, effect of when he starts to cut the nerve off.
Yeah,
and you just want to crawl under your seat and die.
And it just, like, blasts you with the horn blast every time he touches the nerve, too. That was amazing and definitely cringeworthy.
But speaking to your kind of bloodlust point, that brought up I saw a trailer came out last week for a movie called The Purge, which seems mm-hmm. interesting in that the premise of the movie is that one night every year in the country, there are no rules, there are no laws. You can kill and murder and do whatever you want, and there's no consequences. And as a result, like, America's unemployment is way, way down, and, like, America is, like, a number one country, libertarianism forever. But
for one night only.
Yeah, but it – I mean, if a movie like that exists, obviously there are some people who – I mean, if – a studio is feeling that there's an audience for a movie like that, and there are some people who would like to I don't know if it's wish fulfillment, but to see that play out, to see like, oh, like, I mean, I can guarantee you there's people or friends that I know who, if like I told them the premise of that movie, they'd say like, oh yeah, well, I'd do something, like, here's what I would do. Like, I feel like there's a piece of that in human nature, because I mean, at the genetic
level. Well, you
live level,
in Oklahoma, where everyone is terrible, so.
Well, that's true. But, I mean, I don't know. To speak to your point, if there's a movie like that, is there an audience for that? Do you think there is a large number of the population who would – I mean, I'm not saying they would go out and kill people right now, but it is – I mean, there could be a part of, you know, like, human nature that's just like kind of wants that bloodlust there.
Well, I think we already see – shades of it with the zombie genre. I think we see that a lot in mm-hmm. terms of what the zombie genre currently is, for the most part, which is dominated by The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead has sort of become the ugly, decaying face of the zombie genre, even though it's just ripping off what George Romero did, but without any real social commentary. It's really just death porn. But what it does is – it is. It's just, oh, characters
yeah.
die. There's no emotional investment. I am not a fan, but the only thing I am a fan of on that show is the makeup effects, but that adds that level of realism. But what is The Walking Dead? It's that you kill people. Zombies are there to be killed, and that's the appeal of games like Left 4 Dead. And even, you know, I like Zombieland a lot, but it really is that thrill kill. I can kill people, but they're dead people in a supernatural environment, so they're not really people.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of the thing where I always feel with this, and again, and to its credit, The Walking Dead has done this on several occasions, but remembering like, hey, there's a person here, you know, there's a weight to this. But for the most part, it's just something that gets sped on through and it becomes commonplace. And I think when it happens in Shaun of the Dead, like that really lands. Like that moment is very, very powerful because it isn't treated so casually, even though it's, you know, inside a big, you know, zombie homage, playful movie, it still has that level of emotion. I think Shaun of the Dead is brilliant, but
yeah,
again,
it's an emotional
I'm not
gut punch.
Exactly. And so I don't think it's like boo zombie films. I'm not against zombie. I think Warm Bodies was kind of cute for what it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not against zombie films, but I think that there's this level where the zombie genre lets people play in to this destruction of others. And Evil Dead is pretty much a zombie film. The original Evil Dead doesn't really establish the rules of how someone becomes a deadite, which makes it kind of scarier in a way because there's no – because if there's rules, you know how to follow them and survive. The new one, there's just like – I mean, you're not going to survive, but there's a logic to it, which is comforting. And unnecessarily so, but whatever. Thank you, Small Comfort, in Fede Alvarez's Evil Dead. But I think there is. I think there's that desire. And, again, I don't want to be like – when I come at this topic, a part of me feels like, man, I've gotten too old and conservative, and if I were younger, I would be having way more fun. But now I'm just old and a stick in the mud and – everything is terrible. But I don't feel that way. I look at different places of violence. I remember when I was younger, and I think this is still stupid, I remember reading somewhere, seeing some TV news report where it's like, is the violence in Looney Tunes making kids violent? Is the violence in cartoons when
and it has been for 60 years.
For 60 years, is that making kids violent when the duck with the speech impediment got shot in the face by the hunter with the speech impediment? Did that really turn America's youth downwards? Because you enjoy that, but then there's like The Matrix. The Matrix is making, first off, it sets up clear, like, it's okay to kill these people. You're going to be killing a lot and lot of people, but it's okay because they're not really people, but they kind of are. But the violence in The Matrix is so much fun, but it's a different kind, and yet it all kind of falls under this one umbrella, doesn't it? I don't know. What is acceptable and what isn't? And again, that's sort of my big question here, is the appeal of violence, because violence is not a simple term. There's different kinds of it.
Well, to that point, I feel like, and I mean to go back to The Walking Dead, there is a huge effect. The Walking Dead has had a massive effect on the level of violence in media, the TV show, because the level of violence that's been shown on AMC, and it's just gotten like more and more intense, and like especially this past season, I was watching things and I was like, how is that on TV? But I feel like the reason that The Evil Dead got away with its R rating is a direct result of that. And if you look at network TV, especially stuff like The Following, like that, the level of violence on that show is like horrendous. And I watched the pilot for Hannibal this week, and it's also incredibly graphic, but Alan Sepinwall, who's a brilliant TV critic, pointed out that the reason that Hannibal works and the reason that it's more acceptable, and I feel like more shows should follow this lead, is that the violence in Hannibal is treated as something awful and terrible. The lead, Will Graham, he's on like he's close towards the autistic spectrum, and so he feels empathy for serial killers, so he's able to kind of get in their mindset. But it's made very clear that he is very, very uncomfortable with this and very upset to like see things like this and to feel this. And Alan Sepinwall said, like, in subsequent episodes, this is explored pretty deeply. And I feel like if you look at even, like, shows on CBS, like, procedurals, like CSI or, like, Elementary, like, the stuff – the violence is treated like, you know, they walk in and there's, like, a dismembered body. And they're like, all right, well, let's, you know, kind of make cutesy talk while we try and figure this out, and the audience can follow along and play clues. That the level of violence is just treated as like another plot point, another like, oh, isn't that so gross and cool? Where it's not, I feel like we need to start looking at it as like, this is a real thing that's happening and it's not okay.
Right. Again, it's context. Like, I'm not going to say like The Matrix is, because I think, again, The Matrix almost feels a little cartoony in some way. But Adam, I agree. It's become almost casual in the way we accept it. And going back to what we accept and what we don't accept is socially accept in a social terms of entertainment. It blows my mind that it's like, can we dive into this flesh wound CSI and really show you how horrible it is? As long as no one says fuck, go nuts. Just don't say fuck, for the love of God. You can do that. I remember Stephen Fry, I think he was on Craig Ferguson. It was that episode where Craig Ferguson decided to get rid of the audience for one episode and sort of do it like Tom Snyder used to do it. And I think that was the original host of the Late Late Show, Tom Snyder. In any event, Stephen Fry was saying how our language is very much geared around, you know, fuck, you know, a sexual act is a bad word, but we will casually throw around terms like, I will, you know, this is killing me, you know, this job was torture, you know, the words of violent words are just part of our common vernacular, and we just take that in, but words of a more sexual nature or anything else, really, there starts to be some more degradation of just in terms of our language, what we accept and what we don't accept. And I'm not saying that, you know, hey, if there's going to be all this violence, we should just swear like the Dickens. I wouldn't mind. Honestly, I wouldn't mind. I don't care. Swearing doesn't bother me. It really doesn't. I've been participating. Deadspin has had a brilliant thing for March where they took a bracket of swear words. It was a March madness of trying to find the worst swear word available. And it's really about to come down to fuck and the C word. And the fact that I have to say the C word, it's basically what is the most accepted swear word, the one that's the most useful, versus the one that you still can't say in polite company. The N word was not in the. I would also add that the N word was not included in the bracket.
Racial slurs
are also in there. So yeah.
Really?
No. I said. Oh, I'm sorry. Racial slurs are also on things we can't say on.
Oh, okay. I thought you said like they're included in the racial slurs are okay, but not.
No, racial slurs are fine. Go nuts. But yeah, it's violence really does seem permissible, and again, but I'm also someone who believes that it doesn't change people, but shouldn't we, what is our relationship to it? I don't know if it doesn't make you a better or worse person. If you don't believe that violence makes you more callous or anything, if violence and entertainment doesn't change who you are on a fundamental level, then why have any problem with how it's presented?
I don't know. I definitely feel like I've been desensitized over the years to violence just because of the way it's exposed in media. But at the same time, I don't, you know, go out and seek it in real life where I can just get it in movies or video games or TV. But I think most people understand the difference between it, hopefully. There are those unstable individuals that can't, and that's when you tend to have issues. But I think most people just kind of see it as a release, as an outlet for any kind of inner demons that they happen to have, but on a more simple perspective, I think it's just about that adrenaline rush. It's just about the experience of just watching the movie, having that nervous laughter, having those kind of like, you know, look away reactions. I really think that's all it is. I don't think there's anything more to it, especially with Evil Dead. It's interesting that you brought up swearing though, because they drop more or less every nasty swear word in the book, comes out of the demon's mouth in Evil Dead 2. It's very much like the sort of the Exorcist for that shock value.
Yeah.
That didn't really work for me. That it obviously wasn't shocking because we've heard all these words before in a number of different movies or other things. So that was just kind of like, oh, okay, they're just trying to make this demon look even more foul by doing this. But that kind of fell flat for me. I don't know what you guys thought.
It was just kind of there. I wasn't paying attention because the character was too busy slicing her tongue in half. That escaped me, the thing she was saying. But, so again, there is... It's a very complicated feeling towards violence.
Yeah, it's just interesting. I mean, I'm not... I really enjoyed The Evil Dead, and I didn't have a problem with the violence in that, but I, for some reason, seeing like violence treated nonchalantly on CSI or like Elementary just seems not upsetting to me, but just kind of strange. I'm like, this is okay. Like, this is, and CBS is like the top rated network. That's what all the old people are watching. Like,
well, they like it they like to have it on while they fall asleep. It makes them feel yeah. It's like they're not alone.
And I don't have the answer, but I'm just interested why we become so desensitized to violence. And that's why I really enjoyed Hannibal, because it was just a different take on like, oh shit, like this is like, if I were in reality and saw this happen, like that would be pretty upsetting. Like, this is an upsetting thing. And it's just treated so nonchalantly on every single other show.
See,
so,
Adam, you're really making me want to watch Hannibal now. I've been hearing good things, but that approach, I really like it. Well, no,
yeah,
because again,
I like
I like it when violence isn't taken nonchalantly. I enjoy Evil Dead, I enjoy violence, but the thing, it's the act of killing that's taken so casually that is perhaps where I get a little queasy. And one of the reasons that Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is one of my favorite films of all time is that in that film, Robert Downey Jr.'s character is clearly very, very uncomfortable having to kill people. When he does it, when he does it, really, like, he can't look them in the eye. Like, he's in a moment where he has to do it, and then after he does it, it shakes him. It's not something casual.
After he pees on the corpse.
Well, it's not like I was intending to. Why in blue perfect hell? See, that's a violent film. Like, there's violence. See, I think that's the thing. There are films that are violent, and then there are films that have violence in them. I would say Evil Dead is a violent film. Mm-hmm. It is a violence delivery vehicle. And that's, again, one of the things I think makes it jump out at me, is that it is very much – and the plot is secondary, and I think that's something else where you sort of give the very weak plot and characters a pass. The film doesn't really even have so much of a story as much as I just need an excuse why these characters can't get in touch with anyone. That's all I have to do.
I don't think so, because they also why the characters were there, which is way more than the original. I'm just going to compare it to the original.
I agree. It does way more than the original does. But again, in terms of having a story about anything, we're just, again, we are allowing something to be completely threadbare, and in some ways a little, I don't know how you guys felt about it, but looking back on Evil Dead, I was a little like, huh, the women, like, the demon is a woman, and they really spend a lot of time destroying.
See, why I went into it looking for misogyny, because I had heard
and
that,
you didn't
and
find
kinda,
it.
That's kind of one of my biggest pet peeves. But I didn't. I was initially when I was like, oh, really? Like Shiloh Fernandez is the new Ash. I was like, and I wasn't like thrilled with his performance. But I felt like, I mean, you know, the way things turned out, I was pretty.
It's not overbearing. It's just,
yeah.
But it is,
and I was like,
things...
why couldn't the woman be the smart person that looks at the Necronomicon? But then I was like, well, if it was a woman, it'd be like, why that stupid lady?
Well,
if she wasn't here and read the book.
Well, I think that's just misogyny from the audience, because I felt that the audience never felt that way towards Lou Taylor Pucci. Like, no one ever.
There were no smart people in that cabin.
No.
Let's just put it that way.
It's not there were people who had not died yet. That's
right.
All there
just
were.
Just waiting in the corner for
there
something.
There were pleasant alives before becoming evil deads. That's all that they were. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Again,
no, but I think the story is a lot stronger. I mean, compared to anything else that's out currently, no, I don't think it's a standout. But I think it's heads above, you know, character-wise, plot-wise, and even in their character development and the through line that they tried to keep with this.
Well,
I think it's heads above Raimi's original. His original was just like, let's get to a cabin, have a good time, and then holy shit, everything goes
but
to
I
hell.
Think the thing about Raimi's Evil Dead, and I think the thing that makes me like it a little bit more, is that I feel that it has more heart. As sloppy as it is, there's something very pure about that film, whereas this film feels very opportunistic in every single way. It's opportunistic in what it's trying to do, and it does it very well, but it feels very careerist from Alvarez, who's, again, very good at his job, and, you know, but saw an opportunity. He's like, my first feature film, I'm not going to turn down Sam Raimi, which is understandable, but at the same time, it's a very slick product. I don't know if I hear a voice from Fede Alvarez when I see this film.
I think his take on it. Yeah, I do.
Really?
Well, first of all, and I also heard him speaking at WonderCon, who he was basically saying, like, him and his friends grew up with this movie as one of their favorites, you know, favorite kind of to look back on the horror movies, and he definitely spoke to the fact, and I think he does this well in the remake too, there are scenes where in typical horror movies, you get the scare, you get a chase, and then it ends. With Evil Dead, both the original and with this one, that scene just kind of keeps developing and keeps developing, and you think you're done, but then something else happens. And I think he did that pretty well. But he basically spoke to the original as one of his favorites with his friends, and he said, you know, we were the guys that when you heard such and such is being remade, we were like, holy shit, they shouldn't remake that. The guy's going to fuck it up. And he's like, and now I get to be the guy that doesn't fuck it up. And he said, you know, when I first heard that, he had a lot of pressure because he's like, man, he's like, I know my expectations is going to be at least as much as everybody else out there. He's like, I don't even know if I should take this because I don't want to fuck it up. But then he said, to have a remake like this and put it in the hands of like a true fan, he's like, that's the best possible opportunity because he said, using his words, I know that I'm not going to fuck it up and I can make my own vision kind of in the spirit of what Raimi's original vision was. And I think he achieved that pretty well.
I just don't know what his vision is, other than, like, he's very good at setting tone. But again, it's, I don't know. Sometimes you just sense a personality from a filmmaker, and maybe I'm being too hard on him. I just don't know what I would take away from this and saying, oh, I can sort of see where Alvarez could go with this, other than making a very, taking the Evil Dead plot and just making it as brutal as possible.
Now, see, I think this was more, I definitely see a through line of redemption through here. And it's, yes, it's hackneyed at some points, and it's cliched at some points. But he does some surprising things that I wasn't quite expecting. I may not have agreed with him, but he definitely sticks to his idea of redemption throughout the entire show. Now, it's only really redemption for one character, one and a half characters, and everybody else is just there for set dressing and for the brutality. But I think it's more than just a brutal blood fest, because you can do that with any movie. I think this actually had a stronger plot than most of these kind of slasher gore fests that you see.
By the low standards of a... of where the genre is now.
Well, I thought one of the biggest things that surprised me was I thought Alvarez had a really strong directorial voice, and I thought the story was really strong. I thought the character, and like Dave said, I think that like it took the like horror genre to interesting places in a post Cabin in the Woods world.
Exactly.
I felt like this delivered as well as it could.
I agree.
I think it did. It had the right amount of fan service and even like I'm with Dave. I would agree that it's a stronger story and stronger character motivations than Raimi's first Evil Dead.
It's very well made, and I'm not arguing that at all. It's just a sense of personality that I guess I'm not feeling that, but you guys are. That's fine.
I feel like he might have his own kind of like personal demons too that he might have exercised in this too. I don't know his back history, but it just seemed like there was like a personal touch that I kind of picked up on, because he really stuck with that sort of addiction and withdrawal and redemption kind of arc, stuck to that pretty, pretty strongly when he didn't necessarily have to. You could have just hooked audiences in, been like, here's the reason they're all there. Okay.
See, that's what I thought. I don't think he stuck to that redemption angle. I think that was quickly discarded.
With the way he ended it and the way that they kept kind of using it as a touchstone to come back to and reinforce, like, not only why they were all there to begin with, but why they at least had reason in the beginning to stay there and to stick.
But that's exposition. That's, to me, it's not really tapping into it doesn't feel like it's a film about detoxing. It doesn't really come off that way. I think that's something that it starts out as, and it provides a good foundation for explaining, like, why don't they do X, Y, and Z, but I didn't really get an emotional through line from that. I think, again, the film stops being scary halfway through. It's not intended to scare. It really is, for me, I think its biggest goal is to be as gory as possible. And I think it does that very well. It's gory, and it's gory, and it's gory. No, it's gory it's not just gory in the fact that it's dropping buckets of blood. It's gory in a way that is believable. It's gory and violent in the way that it knows how to be. And again, the execution of it is superb. But, again, and I think this goes to my original thing with the film, is that it's all about the violence above all else. And I don't think there's anything there by the end of it, is that it's just overshadowed. It's all about delivering the violence, and everything else is secondary. So character is secondary, story is secondary. It's all about tapping into your bloodlust.
Now, I mean, I'm going to have to disagree with you there. You can talk as loud and as long as you want, but I'll still disagree with you.
Why? Okay. Did you need me to talk louder and longer?
I don't know. Did you talk louder and longer? That was a pretty good outburst there.
That wasn't an outburst. I was just trying to make my point clearly.
Yeah, clearly.
I'm trying to just lay it out for you.
I feel like the redemption.
Shut your mouth, Goldberg.
It did taper off a little bit towards the end, but I felt like it tied back in pretty well, and it stuck to like the character through lines, like Dave was saying. I was impressed with that. I enjoyed it. So I felt like there was an emotional payoff at the end.
And honestly, in the original one, it's just a hero story for Ash. That's really all it is. He survives the whole thing. He's kind of the one left at the end of the day, and what happens to him afterwards is, at least if you just watch the first movie, is left up to interpret. interpretation. This one at least has sort of a little bit more of a complete arc for Jane Levy's character. And I think because he's setting up that redemptive arc, it would be shitty if he didn't actually have a payoff for it at the end. So it was interesting the way he kind of subverted the original by the way he chose to end this film as far as who ended up the hero and who ended up surviving out of the cabin, everything that happened with that. I thought it was tied up pretty neatly, but he also, I mean, if you're taking on the Evil Dead and you want to remake this, you have to have that level of violence and brutality to it. I mean, you don't necessarily have to, but you're going to get torn apart by the fans if you don't have that. And the cool thing was for him, he got to say, okay, we have this budget. We have, you know, 30 plus years of experience in special effects. So we're going to give you something we haven't seen before. I think he had to pay that homage to Raimi, to the original movie, and to the fans too. He had to have that in there, had to have that bloodlust, that service to the fan base. And I think he did a good job of balancing that and getting his story across. The characters, the actors could have been a bit stronger. I agree with Adam that Fernandez was pretty weak. I feel like if he was a little more compelling, that brother-sister relationship would have come across a lot stronger. And I think it would have made the story a lot stronger too. That was more of a performance-based issue for me.
Okay. Well, I don't want to keep talking loudly and long because I can't think I can dissuade you on this. Not that I would want to, though. I'm glad that you guys liked it. And I want to make it very clear. I did not dislike Evil Dead. I went in and had a lot of fun with it. I just felt that the character aspects and the story aspects didn't work as well for me. But I am outnumbered and therefore wrong. Film is a democracy, as we all know. Opinions are a democracy. Those in the minority are always wrong.
I've just seen bloodbath movies for the sake of being bloodbath movies. And honestly, I tried to think of one of those for a recommendation today. I can't think of any off the top of my head.
Well, there's bloodbath films that are... No, I agree. Well, I think it's blood. There's bloodbaths in different ways. There are all kinds of bloodbaths. Some work and some don't. I have a recommendation where I think it's a bloodbath, but it's in a completely different vein, no pun intended, than what Evil Dead is doing. So, but I agree, Dave. There are films that just dump buckets of blood and have no idea why. They're just it's a refuge. I do think that Evil Dead, to me, its greatest strength is that it's dropping the buckets of blood and it's doing it very effectively. It knows how to splatter.
Oh yeah, definitely. It definitely is a splatterfest too. I just don't think that was his only intent.
Okay. Well then, I think we have come to... Maybe we should go to recommendations then, unless you guys have anything else to say.
Did you guys stick around for the end credits? I figured with this one, with the level of like fandom that was around it and the passion sort of behind the filmmakers, I figured there was going to be something at the end. Did you guys stick around?
I did, but nothing was there at South By.
They must have added it after. Really? South By.
Yeah.
Oh, Matt missed the biggie.
All right. Okay. Time. Okay, people. End the podcast because I want to discuss this. End it now if you don't want to know what comes after the credits. Thanks for listening. Maybe, okay, what comes?
I was gonna say we could save it till after recommendations if you want. To.
After recommendations, I can't wait that long. All right.
We'll
okay.
Make you sweat a little.
Make me sweat it out. All right. Fine then. All right, Adam, what do you got for us for recommendations?
I'm recommending another classic movie that has a remake coming out later this year. I'm going with Brian De Palma's 1976 Stephen King adaptation.
Oh, wait, Carrie. I remember what happens after the credits. My bad. Go on.
I decided to recommend this one because it Carrie really is – it shows how great a horror film can be made when you have a director with a really, really, really strong voice behind him. I feel like Carrie's kind of one of the more masterful horror films that we've seen. And with the remake coming up later this year, I really think you should check this one out before, because I'm not really sure what we're going to get with that one. But it's strange, it's weird, it's scary, and De Palma has a really a great knack for suggesting violence rather than showing, you know, kind of like graphic violence. There is a lot of blood, but his work behind the camera is really great. If you're unfamiliar with the story, Sissy Spacek stars as Carrie White, who's a kind of shy teenage girl. Her mother, Margaret, played by Piper Laurie, both were nominated for Academy Awards for this film, is a strict fundamentalist Christian and crazy. And Carrie discovers that she has telekinetic powers, and she's very crazily bullied, and she goes to prom, and you probably know what happens next. But I suggest you seek this one out before seeing the remake, especially because it appears that the remake is going to be pretty closely tied to this one and to Stephen King's source material. But it's really, really strong, and we don't really see horror movies nowadays with kind of this angle on them, this strong of a directorial voice in the age of where everything's kind of streamlined. So, Carrie, I believe it's on Netflix Instant Watch right now, so seek it out.
Okay, then. Dave, what about you?
I've got a real gem for everybody today. You're going to want to check this one out. It's 1993's Man's Best Friend from writer-director John Lafia, who's responsible for directing some classic films such as Child's Play 2, Baumeister, and that's about it, because everything else that he ever directed was from TV movies like 10.5, an earthquake/volcano movie. 10.5.
That had one of the best. 10.5 had one of the best commercials. I still remember it. The 10.5, there's a line that someone says, quick, get in the basement.
And that will set you up for the tone of Man's Best Friend. So basically, you can probably figure out that it's about a dog, but not just any dog. So it's got Lance Henriksen, who's like the king of all sci-fi, horror, everything movies. He plays a mad scientist. The great thing is he plays
it perfectly. I don't know if I buy Lance Henriksen as a mad scientist.
He plays it perfectly, perfectly straight, too, which is the funniest part of this. The tagline of Man's Best Friend is, nature created him, science perfected him, but no one could control him. And as you probably guess, it's about this genetically altered dog. It's a Tibetan Mastiff, so it's this massive, massive-looking dog. Genetically altered in the weirdest of ways. It's supposed to be sort of created as like this, I don't want to call it a perfect weapon, but that's their words for it. They basically crossbreed different genes into him. So he has the camouflaging powers of a chameleon. He can climb trees straight up in the air like a cat or like a jaguar. He's also got basically like hydraulic jaws that like snap. It's complete insanity in this film. It's basically this dog escapes the lab and it gets picked up by – more or less gets picked up by this reporter who's sort of this animal welfare reporter, played by Ally Sheedy. She takes the dog into her home.
This just got better with Ally Sheedy. Go on.
Dog is perfectly fine and protective of her at home. They have a nice little sort of the black humor scene where the mailman comes up and the dog does not like the mailman. It does not end well for the U.S. postal worker. I'll just say that way. It just gets more and more ridiculous as the, I don't want to call it a plot, but as the movie kind of unfolds. Obviously, the scientist is trying to get the dog back. The dog is trying to protect his new human owner. There are the thing with the marketing behind this movie. So they first of all declare the budget. So they tell you up front that is a $15 million budget. Now, back in 1993, that's probably worth a hell of a lot more than it is today. But they tell you the budget up front. They tell you, you know, from the makers of Child's Play 2 and from the special effects team of Terminator. They actually have people calling it, quote-unquote, a psychotic lassie or a canine Terminator. So if those two things are something you feel like your film repertoire has been missing, I'm going to have to go ahead and recommend 1993's Man's Best Friend.
I cannot wait. This
fucking
sounds
amazing.
This sounds so up my alley.
We talk so much on this show about how cinema lately has gotten too, like, you know, gritty and realistic is like the thing of the day, and it's just like everything takes itself so fucking seriously. I think Evil Dead does a good job of not so much, and Man's Best Friend definitely did a good job of that back in 93, because you can't take anything in this movie seriously.
Excellent.
And it's amazing.
Okay, then. I will finish up by recommending Peter Jackson's 1992 horror comedy film Dead Alive, also known as Brain Dead. It was released as Dead Alive in North America, so I always refer to it that as first. The plot of the film is that a Sumatran rat monkey has bitten someone. Already you're off to the races. And the monkey bites someone, and the bite basically turns someone into a zombie. And the rat bite turns – the person it turns is this woman named Vera, who's the domineering mother to the protagonist, Lionel. And it takes place in Wellington, New Zealand in 1957. And the plot of it is like Lionel's very, you know, subservient to his mother, and his mother is a zombie and she keeps biting people and he doesn't want to like kill his mom and he doesn't want it to like get out that she's doing these horrible things. So he keeps hiding the zombies in his basement and like racking them up and trying to like make excuses for it. And obviously what you're just doing there is putting powder into a keg. And the film just is so delightfully outlandish. I remember when Zack Snyder's remake of Dawn of the Dead came out, and it's like, oh my god, there's a zombie baby. Well, guess what, kids? The zombie baby is in Brain Dead, and it is hilarious. You have a zombie baby, you have a zombie marriage, and when the zombie keg explodes, it is gory beyond all reason. It is just limbs fly everywhere, people cut in half. It is very much, from a budget perspective, the film cost about $3 million to make, so it's still along the lines of, I mean, it cost probably a little more than what Raimi did for The Evil Dead, but that same kind of, we don't have super realistic effects here, but it's gory comedy violence. It just blows up so big. There's one point where Lionel takes a lawnmower, turns it upwards, and just charges in to a sea of zombies. Very much in, oh gosh, what's the name of that crappy video game series where you can use any, you go through the mall and any you know what I'm talking about, that one. It's like that, where he has a lawnmower and just charging through all the zombies. It's actually kind of, it's a cult film, but it's very funny. It's kind of a nice throwback, especially for Jackson's filmography, now that he has so really much goofy money. Exactly. For him to do a low budget, very, it's very, I don't want to say personal, but it's that kind of scrappy filmmaker who's just having fun. And I think removed from all the big budget blockbuster expectations of where his career is now, it's very nice to go back to something small scale like Brain Dead and see just kind of his twisted sense of humor, the irreverence of it. And I just can't recommend enough. Brain Dead is so much fun. So if you like this kind of movie and you like to see this sort of buckets of gore in a more comic sense, then Brain Dead / Dead Alive is the movie for you.
So hold on, I got to point this out now, because we spent the last, I don't know, 45 minutes or whatever, okay, talking about how you thought that Alvarez only did this for the level of blood and gore, yet you're recommending quoted as the goriest.
No, I never said Alvarez did this for the blood and gore. I don't think he did this for the blood and gore. I think he did it only for blood and gore, whereas Brain Dead is for comedy.
Oh,
it's comedy and it's corny.
Remember
and it's also
wait.
And it's an independent
as
film.
It to be funny.
And it's an independent film. I'm sorry. In that case, I'm sorry that the studio film that was a remake of someone else's hard work wasn't on the same level as Brain Dead. You're
totally
right. This is a complete one-to-one comparison, Dave. Yep. My mistake.
You're so angry.
No, I just like being called out for hypocrisy, even though these are two completely different things.
I just laid out
over the course of the podcast that violence, it can be used in different contexts successfully.
Just laid a quote out, and the readers and the listeners can make of that what they will. It's all right, buddy.
All right,
it's
to our
okay.
Thank you for the condescension to sort
it's
of polish
okay
that one off, because it can just really calm that one down. So to
glorious
all
fright film of all time, New York Daily News.
What? Wait, are you quote? Wait. What are you quoting?
Yeah, I'm quoting Dead Alive.
On the New York Daily
Daily News. It's on the cover of whatever they're...
Well, if that's where it said, it must be so. Okay. So to all four of our listeners, this was a very heated show between Dave and I. I have no idea. We'll probably kill each other next week.
But it'll be for comedy.
Comedy is what's important. What
Adam will be hosting our gladiatorial episode.
It's what brings people together.
Oh, hold on. Do we want to talk about that last scene, or do we just want to tell viewers to make sure they stick around?
Stick around after the credits. Stick around after the credits. The credits, because although they've already said that they're working on Evil Dead 2, but there is something after the credits for you. Okay, so next week. I have no idea what we'll discuss. Let's just keep Dave and I yelling at each other.
Sounds
you guys,
good.
You guys debate racism and Jackie Robinson.
Dave is very pro racism, and I just
I will be Alan Tudyk next week. I will be the manager of the Phillies.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm looking forward to it though.
I just
even
saw the clip.
Did you see it?
No. I just saw the clip with Alan Tudyk, who's apparently like the most outspoken racist.
I love Alan Tudyk. I love him so much. Now I just want to see this movie even more. Even though I like the premise so much, but I have to keep reminding myself that I haven't liked anything that Brian Hegelin's done since L.A. Confidential. Yeah. So there's that.
Talk to Steve about this one. Yeah.
Talk to Steve about it? Okay. Well, yeah. I'll talk to him after I see it on Tuesday. As for what we're going to talk about, who knows? We will be back next week, but after that we're going on a brief hiatus because my jaw will be smashed into pieces. So
Not by me, just to clarify.
Oh, yeah. So, of course not, Dave. No, why would it? All right. If you want to keep up with this podcast, then you can follow us on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Matt Goldberg. Adam, where can we find you?
At Adam Chitwood.
And Dave?
At Dr. Claw.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll be back with you next week.